Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I am super excited for today's episode. I'm joined by Adam Slemon to talk to you all about some role-playing strategies. I kind of consider this going back to the roots of Roleplay Chat. The channel used to be back before when my co-host and I, Chris, would talk about role-playing and how to kind of spin things, all kinds of parts of the game into role-playing. So I'm really, really excited to talk to Adam and just to talk about roleplay and how we can, you know, do fun character voices or how we can share spotlight at the table in all kinds of circumstances. Now, before we get to today's conversation, I did want to give everybody a couple of updates about some new affiliations that the show has with other brands and companies and things. In addition to the usual collaborations that I have for Hero Forge, DriveThruRPG, and 1984 Games, there are also two new affiliations that I wanted to let you know about. So these are two shops. One is called Tabletop Giant. Tabletop Giant sells all sorts of geek things, including but not limited to tabletop RPG material. There's also things like Pokemon cards and Magic cards and that sort of thing, board games. It's a Canadian company, and if you use the discount code role_play_chat when you purchase anything over $50, you'll get 5% off your order. And of course that 5% comes back to me as a support for the show. So it'd be definitely something that you should check it, look into Tabletop Giant. It'll be linked up in the show notes. So if you want to support me and the show and you like that kind of stuff, board games and card games and that kind of thing, that's a good place to check out. And then the other affiliation that I wanted to let you know about is with Adventure Dice. Adventure Dice is another Canadian company, but these guys are out in the west coast of Canada. And they make wonderful, wonderful dice sets. So if you're a dice goblin like me and you wanted to take a look at their products, you could go check out Adventure Dice's website. And if you use the coupon code ROLEPLAYCHAT, all lowercase and all one word, you'll get 10% off all products, except for any charity products that they're selling. Adventure Dice is a fantastic company. It's a small family-run business, and they go to all kinds of cons, and you know they sell their products in small local game stores. So definitely worth checking out. And if you want to add some dice to your collection, or you're going to be playing a new character who needs a new set of dice, I recommend checking out Adventure Dice. Once again, the code there is ROLEPLAYCHAT, all lowercase, and you'll get yourself a 10% off discount. So I'll certainly link that up as well and remind folks of the codes in the show notes of this show and future shows. But yeah, so those are some exciting news for Roleplay Chat and new ways for you to support me and the show and its development without necessarily needing to spend any extra money. You know, if you're going to be buying stuff anyway, I highly recommend you check out those places, and it gives me the kickback at no extra cost to you. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into today's conversation. I hope everybody is looking forward to some roleplay advice. Enjoy it. Hello, everybody. And today I am extremely excited to be talking to you all about some advanced role-playing strategies in tabletop role-playing games. I'm humbled to be joined today by an amazing member of the tabletop RPG scene. He is an actor, writer, and director who you may recognize as the voice of Cristobal in the wonderful and hilarious Dungeon Run actual play series. Please join me in welcoming Adam Slemon to the Roleplay Chat family. Welcome,
hey,
Adam.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Not too long ago, I mean, maybe it's almost a year ago now, we had one of your co-hosts or co-members, Ron, join us for a chat. And it was a great time.
Oh yeah, Ron's the best.
He's a good guy. He's got some fun mini painting stuff up there on the internet now too these days.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, Adam, I'm really, really excited to talk to you specifically about role playing and like getting into character and doing all that stuff, because that's kind of going back to the roots of what this podcast was all about. Originally, Roleplay Chat was about bringing roleplay into the front of every tabletop role-playing game and you know, sharing advice and strategies and stuff like that.
Couldn't agree more about how important it is, man. Like, it's why I got into it.
Yeah, it's critical. It's absolutely critical. And over time, as shows evolve and change, the focus has always sort of stayed around that, but it's kind of been on the periphery. So tonight, I'm super excited to dive right back into it with you. Before we get going, though, Adam, why don't you say hello to the listeners a little bit and give them a little more meaty introduction than the one I gave. Let them
I thought your
know.
intro was delicious. It was a beautiful introduction. All right.
Appreciate it. Appreciate
Of
it.
course.
But yeah, let us know where people can find you, what kind of productions you've been in,
Sure.
and also what kind of role playing you like to do, what kind of games you like to play, and that kind of stuff.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me. I'm super stoked to be doing this. A little bit about me. I am an actor who lives in Los Angeles, California, who's also a writer and an avid Dungeons and Dragons player. I play with the Dungeon Run crew. We stream every Wednesday night on Twitch and on YouTube. And I couldn't find a more giving group of individuals to play with. I got into D&D because I'm an improviser, I'm a comedian, and it can be hard to find an artistic outlet for what you want to do as a performer, be that as a writer or as an actor. And my friend, Jared Kajak, who's also a member of the Dungeon Run, introduced me to role playing about 20 years ago now. Yeah, don't. Okay, maybe edit out 20 years ago. No, I'm kidding. But he introduced me to role playing about 20 years ago. And I found it so freeing to be able to play characters. That I'd never get the opportunity to play in fantastical situations that, of course, we'd never experience until science steps up and gives us dragons. So, I mean, that's my love, and that's who I am. And I'm someone who always approaches TTRPG from an actor's and a writer's standpoint. So, like you're saying, role play always comes first. And
Awesome,
that's
awesome.
kind of me in a nutshell.
And that's super cool. I'm also waiting on science to bring us unicorns and dragons.
Come on. I mean, we've got so many medications that we do not need, but we can't get some dragons or some unicorns going. Come on, guys.
Yeah, forget first class flights.
Yeah.
Let's fly dragon. Dragon Air instead.
Dragon Air. Bet the luggage fees would be awful though, like real bad.
Yeah, you'd have to put them in like a into like some kind of a third some new dimension in like
Right.
a bag of holding or
Wait,
something.
let's just say you'd have to rent a bag of holding for every trip, and that's not cheap.
Yeah, I know. Too many copper pieces, that's for sure. That's for sure. But yeah, Adam, that's awesome. And saying 20 years is a long time. I think that's about the average of the listeners of roleplay chat. So you're good. You're in
It's...
you're right in the middle of the pack. You don't got to worry about it. You got to
it's funny, right? Like you sit there and you just never say it out loud. It's because it's one of those things where I think a lot of times as kids, we start playing games and we'll outgrow them, right? Because, life changes, you change, whatever. But that's one of the beautiful things about TTRPGs is you never outgrow them. You know, you just have a different outlook on them or different approach to them, and they continue to be dynamic and engaging. So when I said 20 years, it wasn't so much that I was embarrassed by my age, because I'll never tell you how old I am, Matt. But rather, like, it just kind of overwhelmed me for a second to think that's how long I've been doing this.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it is special, a hobby that can change with you. There's very few hobbies that I think do that. I have other hobbies, soccer, for instance. I play a lot of soccer and swimming and things like that. But it seems to keep the same note the whole way through.
Right.
But role playing definitely can adapt to kind of your circumstance, even your given situation. And I think that's a pretty decent segue into our first main topic of today's conversation. So I'm hoping today, Adam, to divide our chat into three major parts. The
Okay.
first one is going to be about talking about big emotions and how to role play those big emotions. The second section is going to be about sharing spotlight, which is something that I feel like we can always work on, no matter how much we've been playing role playing games. And then the last section is going to be about using accents and voices and things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, speaking of, dealing with our day to day and how role playing games can change based on where we are in our personal lives, I feel like role playing can sometimes weigh heavier on our hearts than otherwise. You had a rough week at work, you've had a rough couple of months in your personal life, you might not be up to role playing a very serious scenario where, you know, you're talking about the death of an NPC or something like that. Then on the other hand, there's other people who really like to get into those, you know, the deep dramatic moments of role play. Sure. So I guess I'll, you know, open the floor to you, Adam, and kind of just for the time being, just general advice or recommendations for people listening that might, you know, want to get into that deep part of role play, and how can they tap into that?
You know, it's a great question, Matt, right? Because I think a lot of, I'm going to say the general consensus of what Dungeons & Dragons is a dungeon crawl, right? Like, that's the idea. We go into the dungeon, we slay some monsters, we collect the treasure, we get out of the dungeon. But what I love about this podcast is it's about the role play. And you're right. Sometimes you come to the table and you don't necessarily want to deal with heavy stuff, or sometimes you do. But the issue, I think, is that we never know how to get into it, right? Like, it can be hard to define to your dungeon master and to your players, fellow players, what you want to be doing at that point in time. You don't know exactly how to communicate what you need to explore as a person. And so I think the biggest piece of advice I have to give to anyone about it is organically follow the story and follow the characters. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are avid readers of, you know, any number of fantasy series. And there are levity moments, there are dark moments, there are sad moments, there are happy moments, but the good books get there organically. You know, you can take a sad sack character, and by the end of the book, he's jumping around making jokes, or you could take a happy-go-lucky guy, and, you know, by the end of the book, he's crying, he's less than I, who knows, you know? My recommendation for that is organically go with it and play with the people at the table with you and see what they're giving you back. Because if you want to come to the table and you're like, you know what, today I got to deal with the death of my father, and the people sitting across from you are not in that headspace, it's going to end up you are soliloquying for the entire game, and that's not going to be fun to play. And that's not going to be fun for people to watch or listen to either. So come to the table every time with an open mind. And you, as a storyteller and as part of that story, will organically find a way to tap into whatever emotions you need to or want to tap into. And that's what's going to make for the best story.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic advice, Adam. I think especially, you know, what really resonates with me is just make it organic. Make it flow, because 100%, you know, we've all been there, or at least I've been there, where someone sits down and they're forcing their backstory into a scenario where you're like, look, I can appreciate that you spent time and you want this to show up, but now's not the time for that to show up. And it's going to have a much bigger payoff, I think, for you as a player, for the people at the table, the audience, if there's people watching you, if it happens when it's meant to happen, and you're going to know, you know, like it's going to feel ripe for you to bring that stuff up. Absolutely.
Well, and it's that rule in Hollywood that we have where it's show, don't tell. Right. So if you get a really tragic backstory, what's more interesting for you to be like, oh, my father, he died on the battlefield, you know, or is it more interesting to see you as a character be dealing with a veteran and all of a sudden get emotional? And the audience is going to be like, what the heck is that? And then it naturally comes out that you lost your father in a war. And now all of a sudden, it's so much more engaging. It's so much more interesting and dynamic, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we touched on it a little bit about how sometimes role-playing an emotional scene can be difficult because it'll bleed into you as the person, right?
Yes.
I know, especially in like a home game, when you're playing with your friends and you have like me and my friends, we're not actors, but when we sit down and we have these moments and dramatic things happen, we do our best to like really get into it.
Sure.
And I tell you, sometimes when you have like an argument between characters, the people after, you know, it was between characters, but the two people are like, you can still see the sparks a little bit. I'd love to know what you do to try to get back into you after a session, whether that be for the dungeon run or for a personal game, or a previous game in your history, how do you do that? How do you get back into your skin after a game?
So, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up is because I was playing in the Dungeon Run about 2 or 3 months ago, and I'm bipolar. I actually have a podcast all about it called Bad Shit, which, you know, deals in a jovial manner, a lighter tone about being bipolar. And so, you know, I'm dealing with, I have a therapist and, you know, I meet them every week. But I had a moment in Dungeon Run, which, you know, made me have an epiphany in therapy. You know, because like I tapped into something. And I think the key to having good D&D and also understanding who you are as a person is by tying a piece of yourself to your character. It doesn't have to be a big piece, but a small piece of yourself to your character will lend itself to some really great emotional journeys that you're going to go on. But at the same time, I understand that people can get caught up in it, right? Like if your character has a fight with another character about X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. right? Like he can come off and be like, I'm not talking to you anymore, Brendan, forget you, you know? So I think for me personally, the way I deal with it is I actually hide a piece of me behind the voices and physicalities that I take on when doing the game. You know, for instance, you hear me now. I'm originally from Providence, Rhode Island. I'm very blue-collar in my upbringing, but currently I play Cristobal de la Cruz, who is a fop from the royal court of the Deperons. So it's a way for me to distance myself. And while there are some actual parts of me that exist in Cristobal, it's easier for me to step away. And after I come out of the game, it's easier for me to drop the issues or the problems I found in it with my party or with the story because I kind of shed that skin.
Yeah, that's really great advice. I think there's a lot to unpack there. I can really appreciate that, having that kernel of yourself in a character, not only because of what you said, but I think for me personally, that would help me find my character's voice again, you know, help me get back into the character.
Well, because that happens a lot, right? Like, especially, I don't need to tell anyone who listens how hard it is to get, like, a regular game going, you know? So, like, there can be months sometimes in between sessions. And if you have a piece of yourself in your character, it can be a lot easier to slip back into it and get back in the moment and back in the story and, you know, continue to be, see the growth that you want to in that character.
I love that. I love that advice so much. That's... good job. Well said. I can't. I have nothing to add.
Thank you.
So well said. Now I'm gonna shift over to some stats that I collected for our conversation tonight.
Ooh.
I ran a poll on. I guess I have to start calling it X now. But I ran a poll on X, and while it didn't garner the same kind of traction that it used to back in the day when the TTRPG community was, perhaps wholesome is the wrong word, but it was more focused in the TTRPG space.
There's a lot of toxicity online, and I hope that it doesn't drive people away from this community, because in honesty, it's a very good community in general, absolutely. And it's a great place to find friends and allies. And yeah, but you're right. Like, you'll go on to X or even things like TikTok. I'm like, why do... or some of the YouTube comments we get, I'm like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, we are playing a game. I'm a dragon. Like, relax, you know?
Yeah. No, I hear you. But I, you know, I still was able to get some nuggets of wisdom from the folks who responded. And I ran a poll asking people what emotion did they find the hardest to roleplay when they were playing in a game of Dungeons and Dragons or any other tabletop role-playing game for that matter. And the options I gave them were things related to sadness, things related to anger, or things related to love. And then there was like another section for you know, whatever else people wanted to say.
Right. Yeah.
And by a long shot, love was the emotion people had the hardest time role playing. And I thought that at first I didn't expect that, but the more I thought about it, you know, we're a bunch of nerds playing games. Maybe expressing love is something that's hard for us. I don't know.
That's
but...
true. I mean,
but yeah, it was something. Yeah. So anyway, Adam, what does that make you think? Why do you think that is? Do you find role-playing love, not necessarily, you know, romantic love either, but just do you find role-playing love to be difficult? Do you have advice for people on sure. how to roleplay love?
Sure.
Wherever you want to take this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, love is a tricky topic. I don't need to tell anyone who's dating or married or ever has been. But again, I think people have trouble playing love in a D&D setting is because a lot of people come into a D&D setting with humor as their first, you know, weapon in their tool belt, which isn't a bad thing. That's mine as well. But humor is also something we as human beings use to deflect strong emotions, right? As opposed to dealing with our sadness or our love or our pain, we deflect with humor. So when you sit down at a table with a bunch of other people who, you know, your connection with them may be all over the map. You could have friends there, you could have family there. You could be gaming with your loved one. Who knows, right? It can be hard to be vulnerable, right? It can be hard to let your walls down and let someone in. And that's totally understandable because this is a game and we're in a fantasy setting. And a lot of people in the fantasy setting have this idea that's been, you know, hammered home in fantasy books and Hollywood for as long as I've been breathing, that what romance is there's a princess in a tower, and I'm going to go save the princess in the tower, and now she's married to me, and that's the total extent of role-playing, right? But the truth of the matter is, you're playing opposite a human being. Like, be it the dungeon master, be it another player in your party, you're playing opposite a human being. And their idea of love and your idea of love may be very different. And so my best advice for playing the emotion or trying to find that idea of love, and that can be, like you said, in any way, you know, be it romantic, be it otherwise, is listen to your partner in your scene. I'm saying scene because I'm an actor, but listen to your partner in the game. See what they're giving you. Take it in and honestly respond to it. And honestly respond to it in character and also with a grain of yourself. And keep in mind that relationships take years. Years. I've known my wife for 12 years. 12 years. And we're still learning new things about each other. So love can come in a variety of forms. And it can take time. And you can go slow. And that will they, won't they, romantic aspect of it, or watching a relationship between, you know, friends or family be repaired, that's the stuff that's really fun and really cool to watch. So, you know, I can't tell y'all to be vulnerable because only you can allow yourself to be that. But I think that's the key to letting someone in, trusting your players at the table that they're going to listen to you, give you what you need, and you can give them what they need. And that's what's going to start you on the journey together.
Yeah. Wow. Very well said. I think the vulnerability is key. I want to repeat that for people listening because 100%. And I mean, there's a reason, but there's so many movies, books, TV shows that use love as like a critical component of the dramatic element of that film or book or TV show. There's a reason why, you know, it just lasts on forever. And whether you're in a fantasy setting or not, loving your brother or loving your father or loving your partner, your romantic
your child, yeah.
that's going to be the same, right? So that's something that you can really ground yourself in. You don't have to worry too much about, oh, well, what would a dragonborn do?
Right.
No, you can love your child the same way you would love your child if you have a child or your brother or sister or whatever.
And remember, there's no wrong way to love. There's no wrong way to express that emotion. If you guys want to read a really interesting author, if you don't, I mean, maybe you've heard of him. I hope you've heard of him. Joe Abercrombie. He's a fantastic fantasy writer. You want to talk about a guy who writes love really well in a wide variety of settings, like in different iterations of what love is, like he's a fascinating read, because he proves it doesn't just have to be the you know, the will they, won't they, Harry met Sally romantic comedy. It doesn't have to be the knight and the princess in the tower. It can be as something as simple as a mother's love for their young child, or something as simple as a brother and sister's connection, or two people who, you know, grew up training together, who over the years finally come to grips with the emotion they've been really struggling with is not hatred and animosity, but love. And that's complicated.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, yeah. No, very complicated. Love is a complicated thing.
But that's why it's hard to play sometimes, right? Because it's simple. Humor is a lot more simple. You know, comedy is a lot more. Even sadness. Sadness is like, oh, the puppy died. Sad. Like, there's something really complicated about that. Yeah, your reaction to that sadness might be complicated, but the actual emotion's not as hard to play. But love? Ooh, baby.
Yeah.
Go slow. Yeah, yeah. That's my recommendation. Go slow.
Go slow. I like that. I like that. And I'll repeat what you said too about how you can't, like, there's no wrong way to love somebody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there might be, but in the context of trying to love somebody, I think you can, you know, there's no wrong way to do it. Absolutely. For you personally? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and when you're playing, you may try and express your love to another player or another character, and they may not pick up on it. And that's okay, because what that does is it just heightens the story and heightens the stakes and makes for a more interesting approach. So if you try and do something with a player, if you try and like, oh, we're going to start a relationship between these, or like, I'm going to hint the fact that maybe I like your character, and they don't read it, don't abandon the idea. Mm-hmm. Just restructure it. Take it in a different direction. React to what they did give you, and then let that grow.
Yeah. Yeah. How many people out there listening did that and their love wasn't their initiation wasn't immediately reciprocated or understood or what have you? Absolutely.
At which point you shut down, right? And you're like, no, never again. I'll never love again. Yep.
Yeah, it's over. It's done. And maybe this will be a caveat here. I feel like I perhaps should have said it earlier. And it'll apply for the rest of our conversation and everything we've said up until this point. But, you know, when you're role-playing heavy emotions and you're role-playing things, I think it's super important for you to make sure that you have consensus of everybody at your table. And I'm sure, yes, Adam, you'll agree with me on that one, right?
Completely. Yeah. Your game table should be a safe space. Yeah. It should be a safe space. That should be, you know, and make sure that everybody's on the same page, because you don't want to make someone uncomfortable. You don't want to drive someone away. You don't want to be driven away. Not only because that's going to ruin the fun that you're going to have, but it's so hard to find consistent gamers. If you drive someone away, how are you going to find another one? Think about that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that applies to the rest of our conversation tonight as well, listeners.
But that's important.
Yeah, super important. All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of picking up on people's cues and trying to manage those interactions when you're having a role play scene. I like to call them scenes too, by the way.
Oh yeah, they are. They're scenes.
They're effectively scenes. I think this is a good time for us to start talking about sharing the spotlight and managing that relationship. For those of us who don't act or who've never been on an improv team or something like this, it can be hard to understand that balance of when is it my time to shine versus somebody else's time to shine. So I'd like to maybe start there, considering sharing spotlight and how we can balance that out. I'd be curious to know what you and the crew on the Dungeon Run do, to ensure that you're listening to each other actively and you're sharing the spotlight and kind of passing that ball around. How do you do that?
So it's funny, the way I do it is I try to never make it about me.
Mm.
I always try and make it about the people I'm in the scene with. You know, I try and ask them questions. I try and be in the moment with them. I try and do something in improvisation, which is called labeling, which means, you know, let's say someone is crying, right? There's a scene and they're crying. And you could come in and ask them, hey, what's wrong? At which point they'll be like, well, this is wrong. But sometimes I find it more interesting to come on and be like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And let them fill in the blank. Because now what you're doing is you're not a sounding board. You're not just someone there to facilitate their backstory. You're there in the moment with them and helping them get through it. And what that does is that puts the spotlight on the other player without removing you from the spotlight.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be odd to say. It should never be about you. It should always be about the story. It should always be about the other players and the community and the party that you're developing, because, you know, it, we're here to live out a story. And if it's just about you, what kind of interesting story is that? It's not, you know? And we'll often get caught up in our own stuff and our own wants and needs and desires, and that's completely understandable. You know, at our heart, we're all kind of narcissistic and selfish in that way. But the more you can make it about everyone else at the table, you're going to find they're going to start making it about you. And now all of a sudden, you're going to be giving the spotlight back and forth naturally and organically. You know?
That's really cool.
Yeah, and if you have a player who tends to be, and I've definitely had them in various games I've played in the, throughout the years, who wants to make it about them, let them. But you know what? Be a part of whatever they want to make about them. You know, if they want to sit there and they'd be like, oh, you know what? My father died in the war. Be like, oh my gosh, that's awful. You know, I fought in that war, and I lost a lot of friends too.
Yeah.
I'm not making it about me. I'm just relating to them, and I'm there for your story. And you know, they can take that in whatever direction they want to go. They could sit there and go, hey, you know what, man? This is about my father's death. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I just wanted to relate to you. And I'm sorry you have this animosity towards me. I promise, I didn't plan to fight on the other side of the battlefield from your father. That was never my intention. I didn't even know it was there. And so now the story includes you. And you're not stealing the spotlight. This is still their moment about their father. But now you're a part of that. That story and a part of that spotlight, and you're creating a bigger story together.
That's super cool. I love that, especially like that's something that I've never considered. I mean, evidently sharing spotlight is something that we try to do in our games all the time, but to the level of weaving ourselves in while maintaining the spotlight on the greater scene that's happening.
Right.
I can really appreciate that. I think that's super cool, and I'm going to definitely try to do that next Friday night when we're playing. Nice.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
I feel like a lot of people, what they'll do is be like, you know, oh, my father died in a war. Oh, yeah? Well, my father died in the war, too. Pump the brakes. Not about you. It's about that other player. So cool. How can you help facilitate that? Because by the end of that conversation, if you label the fact that you were fighting on the opposite side of the battlefield, maybe what is that dynamic? How's that dynamic change between you and the player all of a sudden? You know, are they going to start blaming you for their father's death? And now all of a sudden, you're a story together.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah. And
that's
is this the kind of stuff, Adam, that you'll just come up with? You'll just be like, I'll figure it out later. I'm just going to throw this into the ring and see if it sticks. Yeah.
Always.
That's really cool.
I prefer to label. And sometimes, especially if I'm in a comedic mindset and, you know, we're in a comedic, you know, we want to bring some levity to the game, I will make outlandish labeling choices. And a good improviser always says yes. Now, sometimes you play with people who won't say yes, but then you can say yes yourself. You know, a great example is like, we will sit there. Oh, a great example is we were playing on the Dungeon Run, and Serena, who's one of our players with me, we started this bit about how she is an owlin, and she is an owl who lives underground. And we were talking about something, and it was basically the plot of Footloose. It just so happened that the plot of Footloose. And so I made the choice to be like, you know, that famous Owlin play about Kevin Bacowlin, the famous Owlin dancer and actor. And now that's become a running joke with us. And yeah, it's outlandish, it's just stupid, it's kind of silly, but it's also really fun. And it's a great way to call back stuff and make the table laugh and make the, in our case, the audience laugh and just remind them that we're here to have fun and we're here to support each other, because that's what Serena immediately came back. And now she's like, oh yeah, like that famous Howlin' play Jurassic Park. I don't know if you've seen it. And it's about,
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, throw it at the wall. Cause a famous, improv, piece of advice that someone gave me was, look, it is never too early to drop a baby or too late to take on a French accent. Meaning, if you're in a scene and you walk out there and you have a baby in your arms, like you're pantomiming a baby, and someone comes out and they're like, the spaceship's about to explode. It's never, you don't have to hold on to that baby. You can throw that baby away and be like, oh yeah, you know, we got to fix the spaceship. Or if you're in that same scene and you're 3 minutes in and you decide to take on a French accent, why not? You know, it's funny, and now you can create that and weave that into your backstory too.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that that's something that people tend to, or at least the people I've played games with, we tend to be very reserved about our character, right? If we're
Sure.
gonna make a big decision about them, we want it to have meaning. We want it to have it comes from a place of I think a good place of trying to make the
Oh,
story
yeah.
better. But
Yeah.
what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. You know, you have to also be flexible with what's going on, because otherwise you're not going to be integrated. Your character isn't going to be properly integrated into this group, into the greater narrative of the game. I think there's a
Right.
lot to be said about kind of labeling in that sense to achieve a number of things.
Yeah, because don't forget, I mean, you're not the only one writing the story. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people forget that when they create their character, because they sit there and be like, okay, my character, Sir Edwin's going to go through this tragic. And like, you don't know that. You don't know what's going to happen. All you can do is create a character, and you may have an intention and a want and a desire, but if you live in the moment and you label people, you know, with characteristics, or you call out what they're doing, not in a negative way, not in like a, why would you do that, man? More like, I'm sorry you're crying. Like, that's what's going to build an interesting story. You know, it's not about your story, it's about the story y'all are creating together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, that's fantastic advice. Kind of in the same vein, Adam, I know that sometimes it can be hard for people to balance putting on the skin of their character and doing what their character would do, saying what their character would say, with the needs of the story and the needs of the table. You know, my wife, whenever we play role-playing games, she always wants to play the sneaky, sneaky, stabby, stabby rogue. Like,
Course,
whatever the
it's fun.
archetype is, that's what she wants to play. And you know, every now and then she'll get into this character moment where she does something that might be detrimental to the rest of the party. And I think that that's relatively common. I think we've all been there and done it at least once. And it's never in a place to like intentionally sabotage
Oh
people, you
yeah,
know?
no. Yeah.
But I'd love to know from your context and in your experience, what can people do? What kind of recommendations would you give people to try and thread that needle of living true to who they think their character is, while also, you know, absorbing the meta knowledge that's around the table to make the right call for everybody else.
Sure. That's a really tough question, Matt. And
That's why
because
I'm here. I'm here to ask the hard question.
you and CNN, right? This is the two of you. Now the thing, okay, so the way I approach this is a person is malleable. Any of us are malleable. And we all have our wants and our desires. And if you're playing at a party or at a table where everyone is supporting each other, and something comes along, which is like, it fits your character to a T. You know, like, let's go back to your wife and being a stabby, stabby rogue, you know, and she's in a situation where it's detrimental to the party for her to be a rogue, but she is a rogue and that's who she is. Is there a way for the party to support her? You know, and yes, it could be detrimental to the, I'm gonna use air quotes, you can't see, winning the game. Yes, it can. But the truth of the matter is, you don't win a D&D game. You don't. Like, there's no winning. It's experiencing. And if your wife decides to be a stabby, stabby rogue at the most inopportune time, that's going to lead to its own things. It's going to lead to its own developments. Now, that's one way of dealing with it. The other way that I have to deal with it is, I will occasionally use the rules and metagame to my advantage. You know, I'll give you an example. I was playing as Cristobal in a scene where, and Cristobal's never been out of the court before, and he lands in the middle of the Arctic wasteland, and all of a sudden these oh my gosh, oh, what are they called? They're the giant wolf men and women. Oh my gosh, I can't think of what they're called. Okay, anyway, we're fighting these giant creatures, and Cristobal's terrified. And all Cristobal wants to do is run away because he's not a fighter. He's never been out of the court. He's freezing his butt off because he just has a short cape on. But I know as a player, I can't do that. I can't do that because I'm the wizard. And I need to protect my party and help be big firepower. So what I will do is I'll sit there and be like, okay, how can I get what I want, which is to keep Cristobal out of the fight, but also save my party? And so something I will do is I'll be like, okay, Cristobal doesn't want to be in the party. Doesn't want to be in the fight. So he's going to take cover, which makes sense because he's a really low-level wizard. But then he's also going to see opportunities to save himself, which happen to save other people. You know, or finding an interesting way to do that. Like they were surrounding a creature. And one of these creatures, I don't know why I can't think of the name of it. It's going to drive me insane.
You're not thinking like werewolves, right? You're thinking of something
else.
Not a
werewolf. No. It's a specific, and it's going to drive me nuts. Anyway, it was my turn, and then it was going to be the wolf's turn. And one or two of my party members were on really low health. And I knew Cristobal would not attack this thing. It's just not what he would do. So instead, I used a command to send it running away. Because I knew that would incur multiple attacks of opportunity from the party that surrounded the creature.
Yeah.
But that's also something my character would do in the moment. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So obviously, like, I think there's two different approaches. I think there's a way of the party saying yes to the needs of the individual and the individual saying yes to the needs of the party. But at the end of the day, helping your party and helping tell the story is what the most important thing is. So if you have a moment where your wife wants to be a stabby, stabby rogue and she just wants to do that thing, cool. Are you doing it to serve yourself or the story? And how can you as the party make it about the story?
Mm-hmm.
Because if, like, you sit there, like, let's just say your wife's like, oh, I got to stabby, stabby this guy. You know, you could sit there and be like, oh, that's so detrimental to the party. But if I go, oh, I get it. That's her ex-husband. Yeah, she needs to stab that guy. You know what I mean? Now all of a sudden you've added an element to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you sit there and you're like, you know, oh, you can't steal that gold. If you steal that gold, the alarms are going to go off and whatever. Yeah, but she has three children in a home and she needs to steal that gold. And you label that. And you label the rogue that. Now all of a sudden you've justified their choice.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's not okay. It's going to make your life a little harder. But but again, there's nothing to do with winning, right? It's not about winning the game. It's about making the story more interesting.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice. And your story about Cristobal reminds me of something that I did.
Mm.
It was a long time ago now, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. So the story might have come out before in another episode of the show, but I forget.
Yeah.
But I was playing a very low intelligence ogre. In a Warhammer fantasy role-playing game. And it's, you know, for the sake of what the game was, it doesn't really matter what the rules are. But very low intelligence character. And we were doing like a heist kind of scenario where I was part of this group trying to, you know, infiltrate this big manor. And we were pretending, masquerading to be circus performers. That we were here to like put on a show for the big party that all the nobles are going to be hosting in the manor. And it can be a lot of fun to try to balance out. I know my character wouldn't think of all these things, but we're trying to infiltrate. How can I be silly and dumb, but still stick to what everybody else is trying to achieve?
Right. Yeah. Right.
So what I ended up doing was I had my big ogre Zug, his name was Zug. I had Zug, his performance was a show of strength. So I had him carry this enormous anvil around with the party. You know, this was his prop that he was going to use in the show. And I kept having him hold it up as like a feat of strength to prove to people how strong he was. And I kept doing it expecting to eventually fail. And when I would fail, I would drop the anvil on the floor and it would break a hole. You know, I expected it to create this scenario where it would break open the floor and then that would be like the instigating moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I telegraphed it as best I could to the rest of the party. I'm like, he's doing this. He's pretty good at it. He's strong. But if he doesn't succeed, like, it's the ball's gonna start rolling. So let's see what happens. And So yeah, it's playing into what your character might want to do, but while considering the impact that's going to have on everybody else and making sure that everybody else either can, you know, support you or buy into it or whatever. So yeah, totally, totally.
Totally. That's great. Sweet. I love that he's walking around like a strong man with an anvil over
it. Yeah, oh yeah.
And the other thing, don't trust those dice. Don't assume you're going to fail. You may be walking around with that thing over your head all night.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, he would have just been impressive otherwise, I guess.
Number of times Crystal Ball has been like, oh, I got this. I have a, you know, 17 in intelligence and I roll a 2. Like, I can't tell you how many times that has happened.
Oh, man, that's true. I think, too, what's nice is there's ways, I believe, for people to create their characters in such a way that you highlight these troubles or issues or problems, mm-hmm. or, you know, the devil on your shoulder who will call upon you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of games mechanically put them into the game by, I'm pretty sure in D&D 5th edition, it's part of the character sheet. You know, you have I'm forgetting
generic,
what it's called.
Yeah, like a generic, like failing or, yeah.
Flaw, I think is what they call it.
Flaw, yeah. Thank you. Yes, generic flaw. Mm-hmm.
Right, so there's ways, I think, to systematize it and be like, look, I'm in this moment, I'm playing into my flaw. Doesn't mean you always have to.
Right.
It gives you this opportunity to call onto it.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And we all give into our flaws on occasion. But what's more interesting, to see someone give into their flaw or fighting not to give into their flaw? You know, that's the stuff I really love to watch personally and read about.
That's cool. Totally. Yeah. Super cool. Super cool.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a quick phrase we have that I use out here as a writer called Heart of Darkness. And it means, like, what is the one thing you don't want your character to have happen to them? Because that's the thing that's going to happen to them, right? And that can cause any number of interesting emotions to bubble up. And there's nothing wrong with having that flaw be that Heart of Darkness thing that you didn't want to happen to you, but that's what happened to you. That doesn't mean you're immediately going out and trying to conquer it. That doesn't mean you're necessarily going to run from it. Just like with love, there's a million different ways to conquer or try and deal with whatever flaw or tragic backstory or element you've given yourself.
Absolutely. Take it slow, right?
Like, yeah, go slow, baby. No
go
rush.
Go slow. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I love that. All right. Well, unless you have other stuff you want to say about Spotlight and sharing it, Adam, I think
make it about everybody else, basically. Yeah. But that's the long and short of it for me.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sweet. Well, then in that case, why don't we dive into, you know, the third and final section of our, you know, role-playing advice and talk a little bit about accents and voices and mannerisms and that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
So again, caveat, you can role-play without putting on voices. You can role-play without.
Don't need to do it. Yep.
Yeah, you don't need to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to do. It's fun to try. It's so much fun.
It's so fun and silly. And, you know, remember, we're fighting dragons in a fantasy world. It doesn't all have to be tears and heartache. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah. I'd love to ask you, and I mean, you've already done a couple of voices tonight, Adam, but when you play games, do you tend to put on a character voice? Is that something
always.
That you
always? It's the first thing. Tends to be the first thing I do. I figure out how my character would stand, and then I figure out the voice from there, and on I go. Because, like we talked about earlier, it makes it easier for me to drop into character. It makes it easy for me to find the character's values and wants. And even if it's a silly voice, you know, it's like that Cristobal de la Cruz voice is you know, a Castilian lisp, which is nothing against Castilians if you're out there listening. I just find it to be a very fun voice to do, but that also informed who he was. Mm-hmm. You know, his way of lilting and speaking does not speak to like a blue collar person. It clearly is an upper class person, someone who probably hasn't experienced a lot of stuff, who's been very sheltered, who's probably an academic, like who loves fashion, like all that stuff becomes a lot of fun, you know? And so, yeah, I'm all about voices, all about accents.
Cool. Super cool. Can I put you on the spot and ask you to do one of your favorite character voices?
Oh, sure. Let's see. A favorite character voice of mine. Well, I played Eberhard Gottlieb, who was a dwarven smith, who everyone likes to do Scottish when it comes to a smith. But I thought it'd be really fun to do like a German accent, make him a little bit softer, because, you know, dwarves are naturally hard and, you know, tough and stoic. So that's one of my favorites. I've also played a lot of Viking characters, like I based off of, again, some Joe Abercrombie characters I've read in the past, and they are strong, like, you know, visceral warriors who are out to praise the mother of death, and doing that Swedish, you know, almost quasi Minnesotan accent is a lot of fun for me, because again, it changes, I don't know, you're watching me, the people at home are not watching me, it changes how you move.
Absolutely.
It changes how you're gonna make these decisions in the game based off of like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, Hans has a different approach to this situation than Gottlieb does. And that's just, you know, the way it is, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, oh, I love it. Those are great voices. Very well done. For those of us listening and saying, wow, I wish I could do a voice like that, but I can't.
Everyone can. Everyone can.
How can they get there? What kind of advice would you give them to get there?
Okay, the first thing I'm going to remind everybody here, vocal cords are a muscle, okay? Singers, the way they get stronger at singing is they sing. They work out their voice, right? Same goes for accents. Playing around with sound is what's going to make it easier for you to drop in and out of accents. So that's advice, piece of advice number one. Piece of advice number two is placement in your mouth. Mm. So if you want to do an accent, it's funny that you learn where the sound will kind of land. For instance, I'll give you all an example. Like, let's say, for instance, I want to do maybe an Irish accent. So when you're doing an Irish accent, you got to push everything forward. And it's almost living like right behind your teeth. And you'll naturally come with this kind of lilt. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not perfect at these accents. But, you know, as opposed to if you're going to do something like a, Australia. Australia's like further back and higher up. And you say things like Sydney and Perth. And it's all about placing the sound somewhere in your mouth and just continuing to do it. Mm-hmm. And you'll naturally find different voices. It may not be perfect accents, and they don't have to be perfect accents. You know, there's a million different voices in this world. And the same goes if you're just doing a character voice. Like, you know, if you're going to do a maybe a rougher character, that means they're going to swallow a lot of their words, and it's going to be further back in your throat. And there's no accent here. It's just who this guy is. And you notice that your breathing style changes, and the shape of your mouth changes, and it organically happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so never let the fear of looking like a fool trying a voice stop you from trying a voice, because man, I'll tell you, this is the most fun part for me in gaming. I love it. I absolutely love it.
That's cool. No, I have to agree with you. You know, while I can't do as many voices,
you
just gotta do it. You just gotta get out there. And I'll speak, you know, from my experience, half the time I start with one voice, and by the end of the roleplay scene, it's another voice. It's not the same voice. But
you're never too late to take on a French accent.
Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
Exactly. Who cares? We're having a good time. Yeah. You know, you're playing games with your friends, eating cheesies or Cheetos or chips or vegetables if you're eating vegetables.
Weirdos.
And drinking, you know, you're drinking your beverages of choice and whatever. Yep. You're consuming what you want to consume when you play games. It's fine to be silly, put on these voices, and
And remember, it's a physical thing. Your vocal cords are a physical part of you. So if you start like hunching your shoulders and you start like kind of leaning forward and maybe start pushing the sound up, you're going to get a different character voice. And it may not even be that different from your regular voice, but if you continue to play the character, maybe you find different, like, I don't know, ways of phrasing or tics, like vocal tics maybe, and all that came from was me hunching my shoulders forward and pushing my spine back.
Mm-hmm,
and it's very simple. They're very simple elements people don't think of, because a lot of people just sit there at the table with their dice and their pen and their paper, and they're writing and they're rolling. But when there's a scene happening, when was the last time you sat up straight to talk to anybody? You know, when was the last time you stood up straight to talk to anybody? So let your character find its physical stance and you adopt it when you're talking through them.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's fantastic advice. And I think part of it too, right, like you're saying, to play with it.
Yeah.
Start with the voice. Start with the shoulders hunched or mm-hmm. your nose pointed a little bit higher up than usual, and with the sound coming from a deeper part of your voice yeah. or more to the front or to the side or whatever, and it'll come. Right. You'll have a good time.
Well, and look at all 100%. The elements that you've already built into your character. Like, for instance, is your character a knight with a sword and a shield? Because that means they're a frontline fighter, and they're going to be very different vocally from an archer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you're an assassin, vocally, you're going to be very different from a barbarian. And that could strictly do with how loud you speak. You know what I mean? Because a barbarian walks into a room and they want to be heard. And they're going to be strong, and they're going to have things to say. Well, a rogue may be more quiet and silky and smooth because they live in the shadows. And they're minor changes. They're nothing mm-hmm, huge. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, now you have a voice. Now you have a character. Now you have a point of view that's heightened just by the fact of your class or your chosen weapon. You know?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's great places to start for inspiration, right? If pick something that's close to home, that's easier to do than an accent too. I would argue.
Sure.
I would think maybe, I don't know what I'm saying, but
I mean, it depends,
to me, it
right?
sounds easier.
You'll be surprised how I've definitely played with people who are like, oh, I can't do accents, but then they start doing a character voice and very slowly they start drifting into an accent without even meaning to. It just happens. So, yeah, you know, yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah. I think too, going to stuff that, you know, right. Like mm-hmm. I'm a Canadian. Who a first generation Canadian from an Italian family.
There you go.
You just slip in, you know, you just slip into Nana's voice every now and then. And there you go. You've got your character.
There it is.
It's pretty straightforward. And while I might not know the technical, like the technical terms of why I'm speaking this way, I'm just talking like Nana and that's it.
Yeah.
So I think going with what you know,
yes.
What you know from your family or your friends and stick to that first before.
Yes.
If you're feeling shy or you're feeling uncomfortable branching out.
If you end up doing, is another piece of advice I have. If you end up doing a voice or an accent or something that you're, it's a tough one, right? And let's say you're struggling with it, but you find it and then you lose it and then you find it and then you lose it.
Mm.
Come up with a catchphrase. Come up with something that you can always say in that character, and that's how you slip in and out of it. You know, like, for instance, if I want to play a like an East Coast gangster, one of my go-tos is like, oh, forget about it. Now all of a sudden I'm talking like this. And without a problem, I just rip into it because that's what the word is. Mm-hmm. Or if I want to do like someone from Georgia, I'll be like, my lord. And now all of a sudden I'm talking with a southern lil without even trying to. And that's because I have that phrase, oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just find that. And it could be something as simple as like, g'day. All right, now I'm Australian. Like, as silly as that is to say, that often helps with placement of
totally.
Sound.
Yeah, I think it'll help you with placement of sound and it'll just become a vocal tic of that character. And it's, you know, it'll be indistinguishable from the character, which is what you want. You want the players to recognize that character for their voice, perhaps, but also if you have that catchphrase that you go back to, it's like two birds with one stone.
Yes.
Right.
And it's theater of the mind, right? Like, you're not seeing anybody, not really. So that voice helps to add to the immersion.
Totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. I love that. That's really good advice. That's actually one of the questions I had for you is, remembering the voice, coming back to the voice. I think
remembering the voice. Well, hold on, that's harder.
Okay.
Like, for instance, I have I'm running a game for TDR soon, and I have, like, you know, there's like 20 NPCs I have doled out for that, and it's like, how do I remember all these voices? And in, for me, it's about attaching an emotional element to the character.
Okay.
Like, for instance, this episode is probably going to come out after I run this game, so I don't mind giving this little tidbit away. There's a Dickensian orphan in the, it's a rather silly game. There's a Dickensian orphan who's like, oh, please, sir, I just need your help saving my friends and family. Don't mind my club foot and my one eye, right? So Like, and his name is Lucky Ned. And Lucky Ned is like kind of a pitiful character. And attaching that kind of like, but he's optimistic, even though I've seen terrible things. And then sometimes that helps you get in and out as well, is by attaching an emotional element to it. If you create a character who is, you know, a naturally happy-go-lucky character, create a vice that goes along with that. Because then you can come back and be like, okay, I have to put myself in this emotional place to play the character, which means I'll naturally go back into the voice.
That's great advice. Because totally, you know, when you've got this cast of NPCs that you're running and you haven't played a game in a couple of weeks, maybe a month or two, who knows? Like, especially with holidays coming up,
games always,
it takes forever to get games going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and you're like, oh my gosh, what was the voice for that character?
What was I doing? Yeah,
it's tough. I like that. The emotions, I think the physicality for me is the big one. Like, I'll try to remember, okay, this character is, they stand tall and they speak more. Whereas if they're, you know, they're hunched and nervous, that will be something that'll help me get back into it.
Definitely.
And sometimes just write something down. Like, that's a flaw of mine. But like, when you have to literally come up with a character on the spot and you just, this is their voice now.
This is what happens,
Write something down. Like, write down not only who the character is, but how you spoke as them.
Right, maybe their
some
first
kind
line.
Of adjectives. Yeah,
write down maybe their first line, because maybe that'll help you, you know?
Totally.
Like, if you all of a sudden have to play a fishmonger, you know, it's just like, two different sale. It's like, oh, I guess that's his voice. All right, so I write down two different sale, and now I know how to get back into it.
Totally. That's great. As far as practicing goes, do you have any strategies that people can employ to practice? Is there a place and time?
Audiobooks. Audiobooks. Listen to audiobooks. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a long commute. So I listen to audiobooks all the time in my car. And you will hear some great and some bad accents. And you'll hear some great and some bad voices. And so every once in a while, you know, if you're listening to a book on tape or an audiobook, you can just try and copy them. Try and emulate them. And you may get it way wrong. But you know what? You're by yourself in your car, and you can try again and again and again. And your voice may not get any better. It may not be any better at matching that person, but it may help you find your own voice. You know? And
absolutely.
The other thing I like to say is there someone, even comedically, that you can imitate? You know, like, for instance, something as simple as like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, doesn't even have to be a good Arnold. But if practice with that, play with that, try and talk as Arnold for like 2 minutes straight. Because what that'll do is strengthen your vocal cords. And it'll make it easier for you to like dip in and out of voices. And, it, you know, play with pitch, play with tenor. You know, Jimmy Stewart is different than Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's just, again, it's not about being good or perfect. It's about having fun and playing around and not being afraid to try new things.
Yeah, totally. Great advice. Yeah, cars, showers too.
Oh yeah, showers are beautiful, right?
Showers are a good place to. But yeah, the audiobooks is a fun way to do it, because especially if you can parrot things, parroting can definitely help. Great advice there, Adam. Cool, man. Well, I'm looking at the clock, and I think we've gone for a good little while, and you've shared all kinds of nuggets of wisdom here that I think people will be playing back and listening to the episode over and over again to try
of course,
and
yeah they have to on repeat yeah
that's it. Maybe they should play the episode while they're driving their car and parrot us,
maybe,
and then,
yeah,
there you
I
go
mean,
and get some voice.
Unique, right? Yeah.
So before we wrap the show up, I want to thank you first and foremost, Adam, for being here tonight, and
thank,
I want to
thank
give you the
for
floor.
Having me on.
Yeah my pleasure. I want to give you the floor to kind of do two things. First and foremost, if there's any kind of parting words or things that you didn't get a chance to talk to that relate to, you know, role-playing characters at a high level in a tabletop role-playing game. And then, of course, remind folks where they can catch you and your content and the shows that you're a part of and the productions that you're leading, things like that.
Sure. Okay. I think my biggest piece of advice when it comes to TTRPG is you're not playing to win. You're playing to tell a story. That's it. And you don't know the beginning, middle, and end of that story. So instead of sitting down at the table with the story already in your mind and how you think it's going to go for your character. Be present. Just be present at the table. Take in what other people are giving you and respond to it. Just respond to the last thing said. You know, that's improv is a great tool for that, because a lot of times people will come on stage and they'll be like, all right, I already know what the scene's going to be about. The scene's going to be about two guys who are on a space station and it's got 3 minutes before it explodes. And okay, yeah, if you want to start the scene that way, but then listen to what your partner is responding with. That may change the scene entirely. But if you sit there and you're like, no, the scene's about two astronauts on a space station, 3 minutes till it explodes, then you're not listening to your partner. Then the scene's not very interesting. Then it's not going to be very funny. So sit down at the table. Remember that you're telling a story, that there's no beginning, there's no middle, there's no end, and there's no winning. So be present in the moment and remember to have a good time. That would be my advice for TTRPG players out there. You're not playing a video game, bro. This isn't like, you know what I mean? There's no final boss. This is not how it works. Not how it works. As for me, like I said, you can catch me on The Dungeon Run, which thedungeonrun.tv. We're on Twitch. We also stream live on YouTube. And then the episodes are released like 24 hours, 48 hours afterwards. And we have a Patreon and all that. But honestly, we have a very warm, welcoming community full of players who just want to have a good time and watch some roleplay. So, you know, please come check us out. The other thing that I'll promote is I'm bipolar, and I have a podcast called Batshit. And it's a comedic look at the disease, because my co-host and I are both bipolar. He's bipolar 1, I'm bipolar 2. And when we got diagnosed, we looked for content about being bipolar, and it was all this, like, clinical, dry, like, woe is me crap. And like, I will say this, our podcast isn't necessarily for kids. We do swear, you know, we're uncouth in some of the things we're talking about, but the point is to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you cry. And if you're going to live with this disease for the rest of your life, or maybe you know someone with this disease, or maybe someone who's just going through some stuff, you got to be able to laugh about it. Stupid decisions you've made, the pain you're in sometimes. And so I recommend everybody listen to it, share it with people. We didn't expect it to be a success, but, you know, we've had 30,000 downloads in 5 months.
Wow,
and
nice.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. And I think it's just resonating with people. We got to be able to normalize talking about mental health, especially with men. And we got to be able to laugh about some of this stuff. Because if you spend all your time crying, man, it's not much of a life.
Yeah, you gotta laugh. That's
you gotta laugh, baby.
Laugh is the medicine. It's the cure-all, for sure. Well, thank you, Adam. Yeah, wonderful, wonderful advice. Wonderful talking to you. And I want to echo that all of Adam's content is fantastic. So folks listening should go definitely check it out. It'll be linked up in the show notes for today's episode. So definitely go take a look. And if you want to hear more of Adam, those are the places you can do it. So thanks again, Adam. This has been a fantastic chat.
Thank you, buddy. This was awesome.
Cheers, man. Let's call it a chat. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Chase and Alex over at Pocket Bard for allowing me to use their music in the intro and outro of today's episode. Thanks, Pocket Bard.